Friday Afternoon Deploy is brilliant and charming on demand.
How'd everybody Cyber Monday go?
Oh man, mine is going well. I guess I'll go ahead and, you know, call it done.
Cat's out of the bag. We're recording this on a Monday.
Yeah,
it was a holiday. We take the day off too on Black Friday. Everybody,
don't judge us. You know you didn't work.
Yeah,
well, some of you might have, and that's okay too.
Yeah, I had a floating holiday for that day, so I didn't work at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true, though, if anyone knows me.
I worked, too. I worked from home on my holiday.
Because I told Alyssa, I was like, oh, because I forgot the notification came up and was like, Alan, you're floating holidays tomorrow. I was like, oh, good. I'm going to work on that stupid fucking map anyway. Because that's a dragon I want to slay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I am indebted to Microsoft now.
Oh.
Yeah.
You're deep on some...
Well, it cascades, you know? It's a chain reaction.
That's what they want you to do.
That I read.
That's how it's supposed to work.
It is. It's a chain reaction that I read on Reddit the other day. It's only ever described with dominoes, though. Chain reactions are never really described with links in the chain.
Sometimes. No.
Mm-mm. So it was the domino. The domino got kicked of, you know... I mean, this 1080p TV is great.
Oh, yeah.
But at the office, we've been watching The Mandalorian on 4K.
Mm.
And I come home, and I'm a little sad. and so I've...
Who wants to be sad at home?
Right.
Becomes the pitch.
Yes.
Yeah. Then what do you have left but to go to work?
Yeah, exactly. and so I naturally have gotten my wife hooked on The Mandalorian as well.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I don't think that's the sole reason, but really we've just been looking for an excuse, like, you know, throw something in the direction of the TV. Like, we've just been waiting for the TV to break, and it won't.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a Sony. I've had it for a while.
It's not a Samsung. What is it? It's a good one. It's one of those, whatever, they were making great plasmas 12 years ago. They last for 12 years and don't break. I have the same problem. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, that's what happens when you buy top shelf.
I don't know. I can't remember now. It's not a Panasonic. That's not a great TV brand. I can't remember now.
LG?
No, it's not that either. Pre-LG. Yeah. Before LG dominance. It might be a Sony. I don't know.
That's what ours is.
It's fucking bulletproof is what it is.
Yeah. So
it's a plasma and I just leave the same thing on it, hoping for that burn-in, everyone warned me about. And said, don't buy a plasma, you'll get burn-in. Well, where is it? Because I'm still stuck with the same TV with no excuse to replace it.
Right. So I just, you know, forewent the excuse and we pulled the trigger on a new TV that will be in the 9th of December. So I guess that's next week.
Week from today.
Yeah.
Counting the days.
Then it came to my attention that we have an old original Xbox One.
Mm.
So, you know, that seems like a waste.
Yeah.
So then we start looking in. Those are on sale today for Cyber Monday.
How much?
They're on sale for about $350. And that's usually, and that's bundled with the game.
I've been waiting.
Yeah. So then my wife one-ups me and is like, oh, but have you heard of this this all-access deal? I was like, no, I mean, I've seen it around, but I haven't really looked at it. It's like, so if we finance it with all-access, then we can upgrade to Project Scarlet, which is going to be the next generation of Xbox to compete with the PlayStation 5. And so I had to look up all that, and I did. And then my wife told me that that's good that I agree with it because we...
You own that now.
We own that now.
That contract's been signed.
It has been signed, yeah.
Sweet. So you're going to be 4K-ing it up, huh?
Yeah.
What's the...
Yeah.
What's your monthly obligation there? So, what's your pound of flesh to Microsoft every month?
Right. Well, and that's the interesting thing. So
it's 1.5 pounds of flesh.
So it comes from Citizens One is like who you pay.
Yeah, yeah.
So then I'm like, who is this?
Citizens
Bank.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So they paid Microsoft already. Microsoft has got their check, and that's what they like about it.
We pay.
And then I pay Citizens One $32 a month for the next 12 months, and then I get to upgrade to Project Scarlet when that comes out, which comes to about $380-ish.
And then you keep paying $32 a month?
Yes, I. So then I will enter into a new 2-year contract for the Project Scarlet, and I have to mail Amazon my old Xbox X.
Okay. To Amazon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, to the retailer, which in the US right now is only Amazon is the ones that participate in this. It's a little different deal in UK. Well, no, UK, I think maybe Amazon too. Australia is the one that's a little different.
A little weird.
I was reading about, yeah. So, you know, price-wise, doing the math on it, it comes out, because like I said, it's you know, comes out to about $380 for the Xbox X, but I also get Xbox Gold Live, and I get Game Pass.
Which is,
so that like two, big,
yeah.
2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really good deal then.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, Xbox Live's $100 a year.
Yeah. Right. And then Game Pass
is like all the games you want, right?
Yeah, it's like over 100 games. Yeah, it's pretty much my whole catalog that I bought that now I can play.
Do you have to mail those back to Amazon?
No, those are digital, so that's the good thing about
that. Email it.
That's a good deal. I'm glad
I'm going to have to put together a spreadsheet on this.
I'm glad I don't already have those attachments, because then it would be an easy switch.
It's basically, yeah, you know, the Game Pass and all that and everything, man, there's a $400 like value gain in there basically.
Yeah.
If you were buying it all separate, I would be out another $400.
And we talked about this earlier. We decided, why is Microsoft doing that? And the answer is so that you are locked in and definitely not buying a PS5.
Definitely not buying a PS5.
Who's going to buy didn't we talk about this last week? Like, who's going to buy a PS5 anymore? There's no exclusives. I don't know.
The only Uncharted, the lack of exclusives. After Crash Bandicoot, what was keeping people on PlayStation?
Twisted Metal.
Are they making one?
No,
we talked about if they need to. Yeah, that's right. If they did a Twisted Metal, that would be something.
I don't know if we said these into a microphone, but we definitely said them around.
No, we said them into the coffee pot in the kitchen.
That's right.
I remember now.
That's right.
I think there should.
We need to put a microphone in that coffee pot.
We should, yeah. It's at least B-roll.
Yep.
It already plays sounds back to us, you know, fresh pots. Comes out of the coffee pot, more or less.
Once we update the node modules.
That's still something I have to do over my Christmas break. Get that back up. My Cyber Monday was far more boring. I got, though still value-packed, I feel. I got two pairs of running shoes from my preferred running shoe purveyor, which is Ultra, and they came to a combined total of $100. $100 for two pair of running shoes.
That's not bad for
running shoes. I don't run, but I wear them, and I understand.
Everybody runs a little bit.
They are not.
That's not 100%
running shoes. Running shoes are not inexpensive.
Compared to Tyrell, I don't run at all.
No, yeah. Compared to Tyrell, we're all standing still
all the time.
Yeah.
But I do run down the trail sometimes. Whenever I have to look back, make sure nobody is there, and I look forward, and I go, I'll sprint for a little bit.
Yeah.
And as soon as I see someone, I gotta and then compose myself like I'm not about to die.
Yeah, yeah. I've done that.
When I used somebody to be like, "Are you okay, sir?"
Yeah. Do we need to call an ambulance?
I don't know.
When I used to try dabbling in running and jogging, that was my move. Is like, I'd be jogging and then someone come around the corner and be like, "Fuck, now I have to keep jogging until I get past them. And then I can stop and be winded on the side of the road." But if there's a constant stream of people, it's a great motivator, because I will not be shamed. I will run until I have a heart attack.
Do not be shamed. I've been motivated by that.
Death
too.
Before shame.
Well, I was a lot younger when I tried that. I'm now old enough to have no shame anywhere for any reason. I don't give a shit if someone sees me dying on the side of the trail. As long as they don't touch me or like talk to me or anything, I'm good.
Yeah.
So we got an email.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
I was going to read it on the air.
You should.
Yeah.
Someone do a dance trying to find this email. I feel like Casey Kasem reading an email on the air.
Yeah, it's and this person put it great, because they were they said they were a long time listener, first time caller,
yep,
basically.
Yep.
Yeah.
I Hey Lofty. That's my Casey Kasem, the best I got. We have an email from Brian Brennett. And he writes, Hey Lofty. I've been listening to your show since Casey was on Talk Python. I did do that, true story. I was on that podcast. He's actually listened to the entire backlog, he said, which is pretty fucking impressive because I went on that podcast like 2 months ago. Mm. And in 2 months, he has binged through 55, maybe, episodes of the show, 54. I'm impressed. Mm-hmm. I haven't even listened to all 55 episodes of this show.
Yeah.
That's not how we edit over here. So he said, appreciates how down to earth we are. Mm. He's a teacher. I've been self-teaching himself Python for about a year. He mentioned that we had talked about an old episode, the project that we had. He actually linked to the project on the website. He found it.
Yeah.
I forgot that that was out there too.
I know.
And so he looked at it and he had some questions. And I thought since we're starved for content, coming out of the holiday, the Thanksgiving season, that could be what we talk about today. So we had three specific questions for us, and I thought we'd address them.
That's perfect.
I think that's great.
It's our ode to Brian, who subjected himself to 52 hours or more of listening to us talk on the show. So we owe it to you. So he asks, Andy asks, do you have a particular data visualization library as a firm that we use, or do we pick based on client needs? What would we recommend for data visualization? Great question, Brian.
It is.
Do we have ones we like?
We do.
We don't have a de facto standard.
No, it really does depend. Probably, I guess the answer to that is on the client's needs. Mm-hmm. A lot and of times,
but sometimes we make recommendations. Also.
Exactly. Yeah. Just regular charts on a low budget. That's ChartJS.
ChartJS.
Yeah.
We use that a lot.
Yep.
If you're willing to stomach the license, HiCharts is more powerful.
It is.
Do a lot more with it. There's a license associated with it.
Looks better out of the box without having to do as much. They got basically themes and stuff.
Is HiCharts the one we discovered was easily editable in your recent explorations of one of our other clients? It gets my cryptic.
Yeah, it was. That was one we looked to. That was a recommendation we made, and possibly one we were going to use on that.
No, it was the other guys.
Oh, I don't know who are they.
I'm lost. You reskinned a front end recently you were bored.
Oh, yeah. No. That's actually continuing to use what they're already using, which is D3.
D3. Okay, so it was D3. That's what I was going to bring up B3, but I didn't want to get there earlier because I thought it might have been a HiCharts.
So I think D3 is definitely that's a different kind of client. So HiCharts, you pay the license fee, but there's, I don't know, dozens of different chart types, scatter plots, line charts, bar charts, area graphs, violin charts, all that shit.
And different themes for all of
you
them.
You data scientists know about way more charts than I do. But those and pre-built themes and hooks for tooltips and interactivity. And it's really good for a kind of mostly turnkey solution. It's got a very robust API.
Right, right.
D3 is incredible. You can do literally anything with it, but fucking bag of parts, you know?
Exactly.
And if there's something that HiCharts can't do, or one of these other chart frameworks where you really need some custom visualization, like you're inventing a chart type to visualize some data in the browser, then D3 is a good choice. But it is the learning curve is steep.
I've dabbled and I made a bar chart.
Yeah.
And then was like, ooh.
If you've been beaten nearly to death by D3 and you want to use it and you want to use charts, but like the low level stuff kills you, there's a library called C3, which is an implementation of kind of like HiCharts, but not nearly as robust, a dozen different chart types and their own custom APIs on top of D3. Mm. So you don't have to work with the low level, but it's powered by D3, which is all SVG based. It's very fast. It renders quickly. So that's another one for D3. If we're doing stuff on like the pure Python side, if it's really for like data science type work, sometimes you just need matplotlib.
Yeah.
If you just want to generate some charts from data in a Python notebook and toss in a PDF.
And another good library that I found that looks better than Matplotlib.
I'm interested.
I know, that's a low bar, but and renders in your browser. I found this through, can't think of his name. He wrote a Python crash course, though, which I always recommend to people when they're like, hey, I'm trying to learn Python.
What is his name?
It's like Chris Mathis, maybe?
I'm going to
look. But it is PyGal. PyGAL, as in like Python gallery, I guess. But it functions like under the hood, you know, feels a lot like Matplotlib, but then can render to a browser. And so there's different hooks to do that. Like you can just go, here's my data, run it, and then it'll crunch the numbers and boop, open that in a browser. You can also like export basically the SVG of it that you could, you know, maybe put in a web app or something. I haven't done that. I only just following along with his book was like, oh yeah, no, that's cool. And then I was doing some stuff with D6 average rolls to see why 2D6, like it's looking at probability and stuff like that.
Right.
Like 7 is your most common number when you roll 2D6 together.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's why 7's the lucky number.
Those weird probability time problems, kind of like the
and then visualizing it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, a nice little bell curve.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, because you have different permutations that equal the middle numbers, but and there's only one combination that rolls a 12.
Right.
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 And only one that rolls. That's not. Yeah, only one that rolls a 2, unless one of the dice falls off the table.
Yeah.
Eric Mathis, by the way.
Eric Mathis. I said Chris Mathis.
Yeah. So those are good ones. You know what I haven't used much of is Plotly.
Yep.
Plotly has a JS component that stands on its own, but then in the Python world, they also have a product called Dash, which is like a Flask, maybe even Flask-based backend.
Yep, it is Flask-based.
So you build charts and even kind of UIs, like they're interactive. You can interact with a chart and it exposes like AJAX endpoints. And so in pure Python, you can build these web-based interactive visualizations. We've got a client that is internally building some stuff with Plotly and Dash that we're embedding into the application we're building for them. So they have internal data science teams that are building their own dashboards that we're integrating in the app. And that's the choice we've made. Now, I haven't written any of the Plotly code to comment on whether or not it's good.
Yeah, I haven't either. I've read about it. I've been in DeckGL land, which is much akin to D3 in that it's a box of parts.
Yeah, it's the D3 of mapping visualizations. Yeah. Anything geospatial, or really just spatial. I mean, even 3D rendering with it.
Yeah.
DeckGL, super cool, open sourced by Uber gentlemen. Yeah.
It's basically...
Not gentlemen, but you know.
Yeah.
We won't get into that.
Yeah. Use Lyft.
Yeah. But Lyft didn't open source a sweet ass thing that runs on the GPU.
DeckGL is like, it runs on the GPU. So it's like one thin layer above WebGL API.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which I don't want to have to deal with.
No.
I get to see, and I was reading some of that documentation today because I keep getting errors in my console that Deck is basically doing. I may be doing something wrong to get them, though, but there are WebGL errors coming back.
The only thing I like less than creating an integer in JavaScript is creating a big integer in JavaScript.
Yeah.
But it's that kind of, I mean, obviously WebGL requires lots of typing to get stuff to run on a GPU.
Right.
But it's pretty sweet. I mean, as far as visualizations, you can throw enormous data sets at it,
right?
Like millions of points on a map,
which is exactly the problem
that
solves for us on this project. Yeah.
So I would say, I don't know about you guys, but and I don't know how often it'll come up, but when those types of problems come up, I mean, DeckGL is a permanent tool in the Lofty toolbox here.
I think by the time we are production ready with it, we will have learned all that we need to.
So we can implement
it pretty quickly.
And this client is wanting quite a bit from their map.
Yeah.
Exactly. If we were
this
doing
is not your standard throw some fucking pins of the local coffee shop on the map.
Right.
We wouldn't be going here. But when you want to show, 100,000 data points within a set of boundaries and layer them and
click that boundary
and toggle opacity with a slider and blend the layers together. I mean, we're basically building Photoshop on top of Mapbox. And DeckGL is really sweet for that. So that's my new go-to DeckGL on top of Mapbox for like really important like geo data, large data sets that need to be responsive. And you can like animate it. All kinds of great. Uber uses it to, you know, give you a slider and drag through time and see, you know, all active Ubers in New York City over the last 12 months in real time, like played back, or not in real time, like but fast forward, you know, and trace them and show the routes. It's pretty slick. What else do you, anything else visualization wise?
I think that covers it.
So that answers the question. No, we don't have one standard tool. We definitely like, I lean towards high charts first for charts, usually.
Yeah,
and ChartJS, if the client says no, I'm not going to pay $400 a year for that.
And high charts, they're licensing. Like if you're not building a proprietary piece of
commercial
software,
product, yeah.
Jesus,
we got to get those springs out of there.
That is it.
We told you know the rule, Alan.
What was it?
You have to apologize to the listeners after the second one.
I apologize. I will sit here and drink my beer accordingly now.
Do I sound a little crispy to you guys? Sorry to talk tech all of a sudden. Like, I don't sound tech.
No, that may
like
be
a little over compressed.
No, I don't hear it.
Maybe you're,
you have almost no compress.
Well, then I'm definitely not over compressed.
No,
never mind.
Maybe your
cans.
Yeah, or output looks standard there.
No peeking.
Yeah, no peeking.
Well, there you go.
This new board's hard to understand.
Yeah.
I have found, and I'll say this, we edited one episode with the new desk over the weekend. It sounds a lot better on playback than it does during monitoring. So it might be something about our monitoring setup that's crispying
it up. Could even be
because I had the same concerns.
Going through with our preamp.
Yeah, we're actually double amped here.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Amps plugged into amps.
Just kind of squeezing it a little.
Yeah.
A little hard into the ears.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, too. Because I kind of get a crispy feedback.
Crispy vibe.
Yeah.
A little crisp.
Just a little crispy.
A little crispy.
Brian also asks... He says, I'm working on a computer science track for the school district he works for, which is a K-12 district. Most include AP computer science. Like to make sure our track is more career-focused. Thank you. Please.
Yes.
Please, God. We need – this is my philosophy. I don't discourage people from with advanced degrees in computer science.
Know all the things, I say. But,
it's never been a hard requirement. And and around this table, there's not a computer science degree among us, I don't believe.
No,
and,
sir.
And what's worse, I mean, what you learn in computer science may not be immediately applicable in a job in said field for you.
Oh, yes. Absolutely not.
Like, true, you will understand things about a computer that I may not understand, you know, and that's great.
But unless you're going to go build operating systems or chips at Intel or something like that. I always say this, like, by all means, go get a master's or a PhD in computer science. But if you come do web dev, you're going to be really disappointed because we just concatenate strings over here.
Yep. Very complicated strings.
Uh-huh. It's just a very elaborate Rube Goldberg device that dumps out XML.
Mm-hmm.
And so... I firmly believe, and I've said this many times on the record and off, that the majority of the jobs in this field, particularly in web development, could be very well filled by students that come directly out of high school and into a brief apprenticeship program.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we can do more with an apprentice out of high school after a year of apprenticeship than most people are ready to do after a 4-year degree program.
Absolutely.
And you're not in debt.
Right.
At that point.
Right.
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 And
you have a greater understanding of Git.
People around here are starting to pick up on that. In fact, the state of Arkansas has a new program that I'm looking into in which they're helping fund apprenticeships like that, which is really cool. They actually help Lofty, a company like us, fund, they cover some of the cost of bringing someone in an apprentice role, and they actually send them to training through like the U of A with like night school classes. And so our role in that is they'll help cover the salary of an apprentice. We have to give them real meaningful work to work on in their day job. Mm-hmm. And then we have to provide the flexibility to let them go take classes and tests and stuff. And I think it's like 6 months. I'm still looking into it. But so municipalities, states, things like that are starting to pick up on this idea that there are alternate paths into the field. So I fully support anyone that is trying to figure out how to make people more career ready in computer science right out of high school. You're on the right track, Brian. What do they need to know to do that? Mm. Well, first of all, around these parts in the depths of Arkansas, we actually have a governor here that of all the things I don't agree with, he had a big push in his tenure to have computer science in every high school in Arkansas.
Yep.
Which is a good thing.
Yes, it is.
I will say that most of those computer science coursework is either in like
Java
or even worse, when I was in high school, we did BASIC, like Microsoft Quick BASIC, yeah. And then like maybe there was a Pascal class, so it was super dated. Yeah. A lot of stuff in Java, maybe some stuff in C++. Almost no one's coming out of high school here with any experience in a scripted language or, you know, what would be a language that's useful for web development unless you count Java. I don't want to get into that argument, but they're definitely not teaching MVC. Right. So if you've taken Java, you're not learning Spring. And so
making applets.
Web-based software is the way it goes. And so you have a lot of people, a lot of schools that are teaching development skills, but they're around desktop computing and not teaching. I think you have a lot of people that can write a bunch of Java and can't explain to you how HTTP works, which is busted. There's no work left in the world. Well, there's not very much work left in the world that doesn't involve HTTP. How does the web work? Web services. Things like Docker for deployments, which I think Brian mentioned as kind of a possibility.
Yeah, so you talked about that.
That kind of development tooling is really important.
So, well, I think, I saw he had said that deployment was like, you know, very mysterious, and I think it is. And so for my track, I did make a career U-turn, I went to a vocational school. Primarily, the program was geared towards networking, so like sysadmin kind of stuff, and I got to run some cable and punch down some of the punch downs.
Cat 5
and RJ45. Yep. And
cable and IP tables, man.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And then on top of that, I took initiative with some direction from one of my instructors to take some night classes and learn some programming too on top of that. And so I kind of piecemealed together, preparation for myself that, looking back on, I think it was pretty damn decent for web development, which is a good understanding of networking and how did the machines just talk to each other. And I think that's a lot of why you get a lot of desktop geared curriculum, because they're not even going to go into any of that. Just, hey, how can we make thing on computer? Networking, any of that, that's good stuff. One of the things though that I was not really prepared for, and I don't think anyone is Git, like just version control.
Yeah.
It's a boring subject to learn. And if you don't have context, you're like, why am I learning this?
Yeah. It's just me.
It's kind of one of those things.
Doing this coursework.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to do until you need it. Also you need to know it to.
It's pretty important to you day one here at Lofty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To put you to work. You got to know it.
We use GitFlow, too, for our deployment and stuff, and that's a big part of it, maybe. But
that's one thing that's really tricky for education, and I don't mean it's tricky like education can't handle it, but like there's a lot of what's important to us that is arguably esoteric. Maybe the fact that we use GitFlow as a branching strategy has no bearing on whether or not you would be useful at another company that doesn't use it.
Right.
However, when you get experience in the industry, you see multiple paradigms. And so the likelihood of you going to a company like, oh, you use GitFlow. I used that two jobs ago, and I know it, right? So you can't really expect high school or secondary or post-secondary education to really cover all of those bases.
Right.
But something.
But you can hit some basics. Like what I did learn excuse me.
Was, we're all sick from the holidays.
Yeah, so and it's that time of year.
My eyes are burning. I have a low-grade fever.
Good to know now that we're in this very small room with you.
Don't use my mic.
Got a constant post-nasal drip happening for me. I'm battling with antihistamines at a constant for the past 2 weeks. But anyway, yeah, I did have a basic Git training, which was at least we were working on a project and it had to be on GitHub. Like,
okay.
And then the instructor would look at it there. So, I mean, I learned how to commit everything to master and git add and push.
That's an important part.
But
like, merging in conflicts is a different thing.
Yeah.
I would say you're in a really good environment in a classroom to teach people to collaborate on a project. There should be at least one project. Mm-hmm. I think this is super important. There should be at least one project in a curriculum in which it's not everyone doing the same task and like comparative grading, but instead finding a way to get people collaborating, work together, where you have a, this is how it really works, right?
Yeah.
Out there in the industry is you have a big elephant that you need to eat, and it needs to be broken into chunks, and multiple people need to work in tandem and merge their code together.
Mm-hmm.
And finding a meaningful way to do that, not necessarily easy, but I'm sure that there's a way to put together a project in which you disperse, or small teams. Maybe you break into small teams of three.
That might be a good way.
Yeah, to do it, and you have... You know, you could even, if it's like a three-week project, like you, I'm spitballing here, okay?
Right, right.
Three-week project, three people, front-end, back-end, DevOps, okay?
Everybody touches a little bit of everything.
And every week you shift roles.
Yeah.
So you do a week of DevOps, a week of front-end, a week of back-end, and you run it like three sprints, and everyone has to merge code and work together, and you get to learn the pain of a merge conflict.
Right.
Because that's so important.
Yeah.
And understanding the paradigm, and version control is a lot easier to teach when you have context for why.
Right.
Why am I doing this? Why am I committing? The code's right there in the server.
Yeah.
You know, or on my computer,
first
whatever.
Time you write it's like still a thousand there when I come lines back. Of code and accidentally delete it, that's when version control makes so much sense.
Yeah. Lesson learned only through pain.
Yeah. But I like that. I like that idea, Casey. That's another big part of it that you don't really get is the collaboration.
Team dynamic.
Yeah.
That's usually the harder thing. When we hire, like when we hire here, you know, we look for a base amount of experience, skill, and teachability, but for the most part, it's like, hey, you don't know Python? Okay, that's trainable.
Yeah.
Do you know how to work with other human beings?
Right.
You know? Do you know not to eat, peel and eat a cucumber at your desk while I'm sitting next to you? That was always I had a
cucumber's not too bad.
I haven't ever told the cucumber story.
I've heard about the cucumber.
There was a guy, I worked with someone in a previous life that would eat a fucking raw cucumber at his desk every single day. I hope he doesn't listen to the show.
Probably does.
I don't mind if he does. And it's, you know what?
At least he peeled it, I guess.
Tim, though. This is my fault. I should have brought it up at the time. Like I said, I'm older now and I give less of a shit. And in reality, the right thing to do, it's not his fault. He didn't know that I hated it. I should have just said something. But I'm older and more mature now, and so I'm going to bitch about it on my pretend radio show. But it drove me up a wall. I have an issue with food sounds.
Yeah,
that's a personal thing.
Yeah, me too.
I understand. Mine's
a little different. Like, I know with you, it's the crunchy. For me, it's the bag rattling.
You've told me about the bag rattling.
Yep.
See, because you're older and mature, and I rattled a bag next to you, and you let me know.
I was like, that is a terrible sound for me to endure. I will.
Crunching, I can't handle.
I have learned to endure it, but it is.
You guys, we have a customer right now. I'm getting it all out.
Here we go. Okay.
We have a customer right now that likes to do backlog groomings midday and eats a fucking salad on the conference call every day.
Oh, and if you guys knew Casey, you would know that's.
I feel like I'm sitting there for an hour just chewing a bag of 10-penny nails. That's how
I didn't realize. This is the first time you voiced this. I didn't realize that was
It just
on.
Came to me. I just had to let it out.
Yeah.
Oh, I just had to let it out.
He's been holding it a while.
Yeah.
Oh,
man. That feel good? That feel good?
I feel better.
Yeah.
It's still going to happen tomorrow, though.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say.
I mean, what can you?
I'm thinking about saying like, hey man, you want to call me back after lunch?
Yeah.
And just being real subtle. Hey, it sounds like you're having lunch.
Let's go ahead and take some time to yourself.
Go have your lunch, man. No big deal. I got to get lunch too.
Yeah.
I'm going to eat my bag of nails.
Hearing you crunch profusely has reminded me that I have yet to eat.
Too, it's not just a crunch, okay? Mm. There's definitely salad dressing in there. I can hear it. there's a crunch and a squish.
Oh, man.
All right.
Anyway. Yeah. Oh, salad, yeah. Not, so that's the most, not eat a salad on the phone.
That's the most important skill you can teach our youth. You know, interpersonal stuff. But on a serious note, I mean, it's like that. It's those things are, it's actually the technical competencies. If there's a baseline in competency, the rest can be trained. It's a lot of the other stuff. How to work with a team, how to interact, how to collaborate, how to receive feedback.
Right, right. That's what I was going to say. Like having your code reviewed and then not taking it personal is learning that right away, and giving code review without being too critical, right?
Exactly. Being able to say like, hey, here, there's another way to do this, rather than like, this is wrong.
Right.
What a piece of shit.
Yeah.
We've worked with people
you
like
should
that.
Only use dictionary comprehensions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, that's yeah, exactly.
So those are important things. I hope you wrote all that down.
I'll do a super quick aside on the technical side of things. It's really easy these days. Everyone's saying stop teaching them Java to go to JavaScript because you can put JavaScript everywhere.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
That's a crutch.
No, because then they'll think that's the only way to make any kind of software. Like,
I'll put JavaScript in the front. I'll put JavaScript on the back.
I'll embed it. We gotta
break this notion of I am a blank developer. I'm a JavaScript developer. Right. Teach people to be engineers.
Yes.
And showing them, you can build your front and your back end in the same stack, is robbing them of the valuable skill set of learning a programming concept and then applying it into totally different languages that have different tools in the toolbox.
Exactly.
I can build factories in JavaScript. I can build them in Python. And, you know, I need to do them in totally different ways because JavaScript's pretend object-oriented.
Teach principles, don't teach languages.
Right. Right.
Yeah. That's it. That's it.
But give practical applications. Right.
Absolutely. We will teach you these principles. Like a book that I'm readily like distributing amongst our developers now is Practical Object Oriented Programming by Sandy Metz. Mm-hmm. That's a Rails based, Ruby based book. We're a Python shop ish.
Yeah.
But those principles are valuable everywhere. So
absolutely.
Definitely don't continue to reinforce within students that they are a such and such language developer. I'm an object oriented developer. Mm. I'm an MVC web developer, things like that. Front end or back end, even those are fine. But
full stack JavaScript is like the most common thing taught in like the boot camp style stuff. And I get why you only have to teach one. I get why it makes sense for building a short curriculum, but I don't think it does. I don't think it does the student that much good unless they go into full stack JavaScript, which just like any other language is going to be a fad. There's some shelf life on full stack JavaScript. There's a shelf life on Python, so you need to learn the concepts. But every time I hear about full stack JavaScript, I just immediately become Ian Malcolm.
Yeah.
And just your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could. They didn't stop to think
if they should.
If they should.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I can build furniture out of cloth and only cloth.
Right.
Because, you know, like most furniture, you got a wood frame and some cloth. But have you ever considered building everything out of cloth? Because you already got this cloth laying around. You already know how to use it. I just have to stock cloth.
Now I don't have to learn woodworking. Mm-hmm. I don't have to figure out what to do with
one
the wood.
Thing to buy. Full stack cloth furniture.
Yep.
It's don't sit on the couch though.
No,
it is very fragile.
Yeah, be easy when you sit on it.
I'm picking on JavaScript.
Yeah,
it's not fair.
I
feel like JavaScript's picked on me.
Yeah, exactly. today, even, but yeah, and then if I'm honest with myself, like I think I've admitted on the show finally that, you know, the first thing I was any kind of effective with may have been JavaScript, allegedly. You know, and I get it because I get the curiosity of like, ooh, now I've learned to do this in the browser. Can I run this elsewhere? And then I don't have to learn these other languages and stuff. Yes, there's a temptation there. But, you know, JavaScript was invented to run in a browser, and it does that really well. You know, in other places, not as well. But I have even here recently, over the vacation, I went back and was looking at, I watched a video from 3 years ago on object-oriented JavaScript, which 3 years ago in JavaScript time, that's like the mother of all demos, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it really was like the guy was showing like, here is the primitive way to declare an object in JavaScript. And so it's a function, and you have like a create my object. function. Yeah, and in it, the first attribute is like var object, and that's an object. And then you go object, attributes, 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 returns object. And that's the old school way of doing it. Then they have the shortcut of the this. Mm-hmm. So now you're making your constructor, and implicitly it's a constructor. And now you use new to instantiate your objects.
Right.
Then they went on to this class stuff that, you know, that's where it kind of gets off the rails. Cause I've tried to do some inheritance and run into pitfalls.
Don't do it.
I know, but even the Mozilla docs are all like, oh, inheritance with JavaScript.
Prototypical inheritance.
Prototypical.
Whatever the fuck that means.
I spent an afternoon trying to figure that out. Like, yeah.
It's different. I can't articulate exactly why.
It is. And even my instructors, like, you know, couldn't quite articulate that. But you know, that's one of the things that gearing me back towards Python, which I had some experience in, and then learning object-oriented programming through Python. God, that made so much more sense. I'm so glad I did.
Mm-hmm.
Than trying to figure that out through JavaScript. Yeah.
So Brian's last question.
Yes.
He says, I don't know much about deployment workflows.
Right.
Docker is a black box mystery. To that, I say, correct.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, you
that are. Means it's working correctly.
Yes. you.
That means you've got the real Docker.
That's the first gate of understanding.
If you're being burned by the magic, use the cloak of Docker Compose.
Yeah.
And you will,
totally.
You will no longer be burned by the magic.
Yes.
Only paladins can wield it. But yeah. The
add Docker Compose Docker to your Compose, spell book.
Yeah. That helps quite a bit. Docker is a super hard concept to understand.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a hard concept to understand because it is like, you know, it's third wave virtualization. It stands upon layers and layers of previous virtualization, and understanding why it does what it does, even understanding why Docker is a hard enough problem, much less how Docker.
Without having
experience. Because I don't know how it works. It's all based on LXC containers. And
We had virtual boxes for a while.
But before that, we had real boxes.
Yes.
You put them in the corner and you watch them blink. And if one got fucked up, you bought a new one. And reinstalled the operating system.
Replaced hardware. Yeah. And then there was virtual boxes. And then there was Vagrant, because there's no time to GUI virtual box.
Vagrant was beautiful for about a year and a half.
Vagrant up.
And then there was Docker that was like, hey, what if we only virtualize part of the box?
Mm-hmm.
I was like,
the first time that Docker clicked for me was when we migrated our first app to Docker. I said, fuck it, let's try it. And you know, it was in virtualized stuff. It was running in AWS and EC2 boxes, and we had Ansible scripts that would take a fresh machine and install all the dependencies and install the app on it, and it would take about probably 15 minutes to deploy a new version of the app.
Yep.
We would do the same thing and build a Docker image, and that would also take like 15 minutes. It was like, oh, it's doing the same shit, right? But once it was built, we went to deploy it. It was like, we've got the image pre-built. It's time to switch the app. We deployed the app, and it took less than a second. Like, click, done. It's deployed. Yep. And then we were just like, eyes boggled, you know, like holy cow. Oh, something went wrong. Let's roll it back. Click. And deploy the other image, it's back. And it was like, that was the aha moment for me. It was like, oh, normally that would take 15 minutes.
Yeah, Sloan.
And if you had to do it across 1,000 servers, good luck.
Sloan described it on the show once. And I thought it's like the best description is it's crystallized memory.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically, I've built this thing. Now it's in memory. Now I crystallize that. Now make that be on other machines just like that. Like, you know, and that's kind of it. That's the concept of it.
So it's hard to understand how and why. You kind of just have to get in there and mess with it. Definitely the understanding of why comes before the how. I mean, it's one of those things. That's like, I don't know how it's doing it, but I do see the benefit.
Yeah,
right. And I think it's hard to understand the full concept of what Docker really is and what it's doing without going through, this is a tricky thing, without going through the evolution of all those systems. It's more clear to me because I see what problems it's fixing. I see what intermediate steps we took to get there and what the shortcomings were. But I don't know. I don't know how you teach that to a brand new student.
Yeah.
Except that, you know, at some level or another, I don't really have a lot of knowledge about what happens under the operating system. Someone in like 1989 said the same thing about like protected memory in an operating system. It was just like, God, I don't know how to explain protected memory. That app can't, you know, they're all talking to the memory, but this app can't touch that one's memory. And I mean, that's a good thing. I don't really know how to explain why. Just back in the day, we used to have to do much. Just use protective memory. I don't know. It works. It's the right way to do it.
Yeah, just do
that's,
it.
That's what happened at some point. I guess Docker's maybe moving in that direction.
Yeah. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like, I think that there is, especially in the software industry, there is a tendency to overemphasize understanding of having a very strong understanding of every tool that you use. Don't use it if you don't understand it. Right. Don't use magic. And there's some truth in that.
The JavaScript industry has proven that to be false. Well, you can absolutely build massive things on things you don't understand.
Right. But but like there's something to be said for understanding the technology you use, and then there's also something to be said for like letting the people who build the sophisticated proven technology know how that's built and what that consists of. You understand it at a basic level and then say, I understand enough about this that I will utilize it confidently.
It's the beauty of open source.
And then as I need to know more, I will dig deeper.
This is what open source has done for us. You can confidently stand on the shoulder of giants who all have the same sort of altruistic goal to building a good thing that we can all benefit from. Mm. Back in the day, you know, this mentality of like the not invented here paradox of like, you know, that mentality, it's an old school mentality. And it comes from a time where if you just picked up a thing off the shelf that you didn't understand how it worked and then it broke, then what? Who was going to support it?
Right.
Who do you call? There's no one there. But now in the world of open source, you know, there are thousands upon thousands, tens of thousands of developers contributing at some level to Docker's development. And so we can stand on the shoulder of those giants and we can know that people that are really vested in its future are... you can't take that for granted. If Docker starts to get orphaned, there will be a rallying call to try and get people to support it. But right now, it's hot stuff, and so it's very well supported. And so you don't have that same problem of, like, if it breaks, who do I call? The answer is, like, believe me, if Docker breaks, the whole world's going to know about it, and there's going to be a lot of people working on it.
Yeah.
Maybe you, if you are inclined to do so,
right.
But you don't have to be inclined to do so to leverage it in a production.
Yeah, capacity. No, there are organizations that are so dependent upon Docker now that wouldn't be a thing to have to worry about. But yeah, it's sort of the paradigm of like, I don't know the molecular structure of unleaded gasoline, but I drive here. I use it to drive to this destination.
Quite a volatile substance that we all interact with on a daily basis.
Right.
We built systems around it.
We know how to use it and everything, but I couldn't distill it from scratch if I had to, you know?
And so, we're glad that there are people that can.
Right.
Totally.
Right.
And if we ran out of those people, we'd be in trouble.
Yep. We'd have to train new people.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but no one knows how it works. Like, I don't know, get a book or something. They didn't write books on Docker.
Yeah.
It's Docker.
It's moving too fast. Yeah. There are some books.
All the content on how it works was on Medium, and then Medium fucking blew up their IPO, and now they're gone too. That's the more likely outcome if people forget how does Docker. So Brian's more specific question was, I don't know Docker. Hypothetically, I don't know AWS production systems deployments. How bad does that hurt me as a junior developer trying to enter the workforce? And I would say not much.
Yeah.
I think any company that is asking a junior developer to come in on day one and actually build out like production infrastructure, you don't want to work there.
No.
I'm not saying it doesn't happen.
But they have some stuff they need to figure out.
Yeah.
They may just not have known.
That's the kind of thing that's going to happen from a company that is brand new and is hiring its first developer and is trying to hire a junior developer to save money. And there's a whole lot of reasons why that's going to fail. Because you wouldn't expect someone to come right out of high school with a background in being an industrial mechanic and just be like, go build me an engine from scratch, right? That's not how that works.
Right.
It doesn't mean that there aren't companies out there doing it, but as a junior developer, you should be trying to get you don't want to go as a junior. I did this, so I can speak from experience. You don't want to go as a junior entry level and go be the only programmer at a company. Even if you manage to not lose your job, you're not going to progress in your career very fast at all. There's no one there to teach you. And so I think Docker production deployments, you should be going to an organization that already has that figured out, that has other people on the team that you can shadow under for that.
You could potentially advantage yourself in some situations.
You would definitely raise our eyebrows as a junior that came in and said, I have all this experience with Docker.
But
that would be exciting.
It's not a deal breaker.
Totally.
Yeah, no. That being said, I would say don't be afraid to just jump into some tutorials to like figure out how to deploy stuff to these various services out there.
Mm-hmm. Docker actually makes that a lot easier.
Yeah.
And I would say learn Docker first and then go figure out how to deploy Docker on Amazon, figuring out how to spin up infrastructure in AWS. It's super nice
locally to have a Docker compose and spin up some stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, instead of running all your
environments, exactly.
Yeah, and running all your services actually VMs on your machine.
Or 10 virtual machines.
And,
yeah,
in a database that I have to update and then downgrade.
Or MongoDB if you're not in databases.
Be sure to upgrade your RAM, though.
Yeah.
And your hard drive space.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All of that.
And if you're on Docker for Mac and you're doing anything with the hard disk, make sure you're plugged into AC power as well.
Yeah.
I can burn through 100% of battery in about 25 minutes.
The shorts.
One particular
if you
project.
Want three computers on your computer, you better be ready to feed that computer.
Yeah, if you got exhibit computer in your computer while you computer.
The short story, like what Docker does, back to the virtual boxes. I want a virtual box back in the day, virtual box for my database, virtual box for my front end, virtual box for my back end. Like now it's one virtual box that runs all those services, but you still got a virtual box running on your box. So that's going to eat some power. Yeah.
So there you go. I hope we answered questions somewhat in a useful way for Brian.
Yeah.
Hope our ramblings made some sense.
And Brian, thanks for donating a topic for the podcast this week.
Yes.
We appreciate that. We still have tryptophan hangovers over here, so that's the turkey stuff
such
that makes
turkey.
You sleepy.
Such good turkey.
There was some good turkey.
Oh, man, it was the carbs.
Not smoked. You guys had the smoked
turkeys. We smoked our turkeys.
We roasted ours. It was good, though.
I ate too many carbs, and I knew I was doing it the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
I don't blame you.
Yeah, no, it was tough. Chocolate pecan pie.
Now it's just time to get ready for the Christmas season, where I will smoke another turkey
and I will make an excuse to eat another chocolate pecan pie.
Exactly.
I need to go run more.
Yeah, and then I will promise to work
out. It's
kind of
warm outside, Tyrell. Why aren't you running right now?
Do it right now.
Okay. All right. Tyrell's going to go for a run. I'm going to go home and eat leftovers. That won't be timely at all by the time you hear this.
No.
But Thanksgiving. Do you remember?
Yeah.
All right.
Hi.
It's been a good week. We'll see you guys.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty Labs. If you enjoyed the show, you can subscribe to future episodes via iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. You can also follow at Friday Deploy on Facebook and Twitter for episode previews, live streams, and other behind-the-scenes peeks. Past episodes and show notes on this episode can be found at friday.hirelofty.com. That's friday.hirelofty.com. If you'd like to contact the show, or if you're local to the Northwest Arkansas area and would like to be a guest on the show, you can email us at podcast@hirelofty.com.